Blog Talk Radio.
Today, May 8th, 8 Ball 2013. May 8th, 2013. This week, I'm going to tell you a little story. This week, I was reading an article called 8 Ways Happy People Start Their Day. You know, I read it, I saw it on Twitter. There's all kinds of recommendations about how you can improve there. So I went to this site, 8 Ways Happy People Start Their Day. And it says, take a few minutes when you wake up to remember what a privilege it is to be alive. Hey, there's a, excuse me, I got to turn that off.
Do you want me to take over the monologue for a second?
No, I don't want you
I've never done this before, but
no,
I can.
Take it over. I've had enough problems. The guest calls in a minute, emails me a minute before the show starts. What's the number I supposed to call?
Oh, my goodness.
I just took it up a half an hour ago. You think I got my own site. I got the Blog Talk Radio site. I'm on Twitter. Why the hell? That's what I want to know, eh?
What can I do?
Shut up! But I'll finish complaining. Then stupid Blog Talk Radio, I phoned them on my phone and I can't get in. It blocks me. I called them 5 times. She keeps saying, oh, I can't hear you, your PIN number. I called, my phone's working. I got through to the number. I can't hear your PIN number. I can't hear your PIN number. So then I call in on Skype. I'm on Skype now. And then, anyway.
Yeah, man, we Skype.
Yeah. Get back on track, will ya? And you?
Would
call
you?
In. Yeah, of course, Jerry, who's part of the show, he calls in 10 seconds before the show starts. He's so busy.
Actually, 39. And guess what? Tough guy. I actually cut off a customer who was trying to tell me about a dozen people they need. I was only able to write down the first 5 or 6, and I said, hey, I got to go. There's something far more important than you hiring people for me, and it's called the Recording Animal Show! Are you ready?
You want to? I can skip my thing. Oh, no, let me finish.
All right.
Let me go back to my intro. I'm talking about these happy things. You what you do in the morning to make yourself happy for the whole day. And the first thing to do is don't get out of bed.
Oh, boy.
Remember what a privilege it is to be alive, just like I'm telling you now. Anyway, and I had to wonder, as I often do when I read this garbage, why is it a privilege? Why is it a privilege to be alive? People are always saying life is a gift. You got to remember that. Life isn't a gift. A gift is something you give to somebody before you're born. You don't exist, right?
Right.
I know some people believe you, you know, you got a soul that's just dying to get here, but I don't know why. Look, a gift is also something pleasant. That's what I consider a gift. But look at a country like Egypt. They've got a serious economic problems right now. And you know why? They don't like to mention it in the newspaper all the time. But in the last 30 years, the population has doubled from 40 million to 80 million. I don't think they were a rich country before, but now they have nothing. And a lot of parents think that's a good time to give the gift of life. But if I was their kid, I wouldn't call it a gift. I wouldn't call it a gift if I was born in Bangladesh. No! Life is not much fun in these poor countries, and call me crazy, but a life of poverty doesn't seem like a gift to me. And if you think it is, don't come to my birthday party. No! I'll tell you one other thing that bugs me, and I'm bugged today, as you can tell, I hope. Anyway, I don't get it when people say, life is so short, you have to do as many fun things as possible while you can. I heard someone say it the other day about traveling. Life is short, you got to go as many places as you can, as if they're saving up for later. What later? You're going to die! going to die after this life. You're not going to miss anything. You're dead. Anyway, what do I know, right? I'm a humble man. If you think life is a privilege and a gift, call into the show. Tell me how that works, but first I have to find out, Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show! Going on.
We got the biggest recruiting superstar I think we've ever had on the show today.
This guy is huge.
And he had to call me, email me a minute before the show to ask me what number to call. He's a sorcerer. Oh. You think he can find that out on the internet? No! Just like every other jerk who comes on the show, they have to ask me a few minutes before, what number do I call? How about going to my website, right? They know me on Twitter. Just click on my bio and you'll find it.
Your website is not easy to find the phone number on.
That's not true.
It's entirely
true.
It is. It's
your
not
website
true.
Sucks.
Yeah, but the phone number's right there.
Thank you, Alan. Finally, you say something I agree with 110%. Okay.
And you know, if we all find this, I mean, I have a calendar weekly pop-up that has the phone number on it. I thought we were all that good.
Oh, no, we're not, okay? Recruiters are a different kind of people. But
I remember every phone number. I don't have to write any phone number down ever.
Yeah, okay. I read this. I read something to Jerry before the show, and he dismissed it as insignificant. But I want to tell people, this guy sent me an email this week. His name is Steve Nehez or something like that. It's Hungarian. At least I think it is, and he's a recruiter in Detroit, and he sent me an email. He said, last week, the father of one of my high school buddies passed away suddenly, and I had to drive from Detroit to Wisconsin. I was listening to the podcast of my favorite show. It ran out after 4 hours, so I did a quick search for podcasts on my iPhone, and you came up first or second under recruiting. So I started picking a bunch of shows I thought might be interesting, and I was laughing! I was laughing, he says, to the point of tears. In between the laughing and horsing around, your crew is pretty amazing and right on target. I've been taking notes, and I've learned a lot from your guests and the co-hosts. So what do you think about that? Thank you, Steve. Finally, somebody gives me a good rating. Okay, now we'll see if the guest is here. Robbie McIntosh.
Yeah, I've been here. Been here for 2 hours.
Oh, you've, oh yeah.
Can you ever have Americans as guests?
That accent's not going to get you anywhere on this show. What'd you say, Mike?
Can we ever have Americans on this show?
Sure, let him talk.
This guy is a rootless cosmopolitan, let me tell you. He's born in Australia. He started out recruiting here in Canada, in Toronto. I think he lived in Mississauga. And now he's down there in Atlanta. And he's a foreigner ruling the hiring for one of your major companies. Microsoft.
And don't forget, I'm married to a French-Canadian.
I didn't know that. It's even more complicated.
Yeah, Québécois.
Okay.
Parlez-vous français?
You don't speak French, do you?
Yeah, mange la merde.
No, you know all the swear words because that's how she talks to you. Okay. Now, listen, Robbie.
Yep.
Can you hear me? Robbie, can you hear me?
No, I can't, buddy. You're on Skype.
You know, I am on Skype. It's true. But I'm going to try to call in.
You're breaking your own rule.
No, I'm wearing a headset, and I had no choice, or I wouldn't have been here, and the show wouldn't have started. But I can actually try to call in on the customer line, not the owner's line. We'll see. But look, did you bring a song?
I have a song. I'd like a song. I'd like you guys to sing a song to me, actually.
What is it?
I'd like you all to sing Dunkershane.
Dunkershane? Do you know how to sing it?
Wayne Newton. Remember Wayne Newton?
I know the song. I don't know every word except the Dunkershine. Let's sing Land Down Under, so you're from Australia, okay?
The Vegemite song. The Vegemite song, right?
I don't know that song. How does it go?
That's the Land Down Under
song.
Oh, is it? Okay, are you ready, Rob?
You stop the music, and I'll sing along with you.
No, it's just you and me. The others won't sing. It's a cappella.
Oh, okay.
You ready?
Absolutely.
One, two, three. I come from
a land
down
under.
Where beer does flow and men chunder.
I forgot that lyric, yes.
Can't you hear the... Where are
the
you
thunder.
Going? Yeah, thanks. You better run. Yeah, you better run, you chicken! Does everybody know what chunder means? It means vomit. These guys are bragging that they drink so much beer till they start barfing. Congratulations, Australians!
Most Australians actually don't know that song. It's like the same way as Australians don't actually drink Foster's.
Okay, I don't care, and I don't know about that stuff either. Look, do you ever feel bad that the Macintosh is like the lousiest apple around?
As in the apple you eat or as in the computer?
The apple you eat, okay? Unless you get it early. When you get it early, it's hard and sour. I like it, but most of the time it's just kind of mushy. Okay, I'll move on to real questions. Does anybody else want to say anything before we get going? Hello?
Is your first question going to be his favorite color?
Maybe I should ask him what he ate for breakfast. I don't know. Here,
I don't eat a breakfast.
I'll ask him a good question. He went to the Computer Data Institute. That's here in Toronto. It's like a vocational school. My friend went there. He was a refugee from Czechoslovakia before the communism ended, and he took a 6-month computer course there and got a job. He was a smart guy, and I thought that was a good move for him. Robbie, how long was the course you took at Computer Data Institute?
I think it was about 9 months or 12 months.
Nine months.
Wasn't
okay.
That long at all. Yep.
Now, what was your plan? To become a computer technician?
Oh, geez. My plan back then, I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do, and I think my parents said, you got to go do something or we'll kick you out of the house.
Okay. And so now are they proud of you? And does that prove that you don't have to have a good education to rise to the top? All this stuff about, you know, having a BA to get the, you know, any job, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Right. Thank you. And you wouldn't be able to get a job today, would you?
I disagree with that as well.
On the basis of your resume with no BA?
I think it helps. I think it gives you an advantage, but I don't think it's the be-all, end-all that people make it out to be.
I think it is anyway. Okay. You want to describe yourself? Tell us who you are.
Sure. I'm 6'1". I'm 230. I've got brown hair. I like dating women that are French-Canadian. I have 2 dogs, a guinea pig. Like, what do you want to know, the personal stuff or the professional stuff?
I don't know,
stuff?
But by identifying French-Canadians like that, does that mean you're disparaging other people and that we're going to get in trouble on this
show?
No,
I see where he's going with it.
Where?
French-Canadians, man. They're the hottest.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
They really are.
I'm not going to bring my wife into this conversation.
Let's get going. What's your title? What company do you work for?
Title is Senior Vice President of Recruiting. The company is Avanade. How much more detail do you want?
I've got you on LinkedIn as Senior Vice President of Global Talent Acquisition.
Oh, my God. I forgot the global piece. You're right. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. There's 10,000 people in that company. It's a joint enterprise or effort between Microsoft and Accenture. Am I
That's
right?
That's old data. No, we're 20,000 now.
You're 20,000 people?
Yep.
Okay, the old data says that you're in charge of recruiting there, but actually half of your people come from Accenture. Is that right?
No.
How many? What percentage of your employees come from Accenture?
As in year over year or the total population now?
You know what? Year over year, okay? If you tell people you're recruiting for a 20,000-person company and one of the partners is just shoving 10,000 people your way, you're not recruiting for 20,000 people.
I would say probably about 5%, 10% max.
That's
come
what
from,
I saw on the internet,
come from Accenture.
I can't debate it with you. Okay, look, have you been following this thing that happened in Cleveland?
Where's Cleveland?
Okay, those girls
got
released.
I'm just messing with you, Michael. I know where Cleveland is.
Girls got released. And I read that the neighbors called the police a few years ago because they saw a naked woman crawling around in the backyard. That's pretty strange. It should make people very worried. The police came. They didn't go in the house. If you ever see recruiters who are also looking for people, do anything as dumb as that.
Yeah, but that's the question. If I've seen recruiters do dumb stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose I have over the years.
Every day.
No, I mean, the evidence is right in front of them there, and they don't even probe a little. Come on. Do you have an example?
Of recruiters walking into a crime scene?
not walking into the house when they should.
I told Jerry this morning, I said, this guy's going to be difficult. I said, we're not going to have an easy time with
him. Isn't it usually the other way around, Michael? You're meant to make the hard time for me.
No, that's not true. I want someone who's going to answer the questions.
I am. I'm giving you black and white answers to if you put me on the stand in a courtroom.
Yeah, I'll put this out to everybody. This guy, Charles Ramsey, who the interview has gone global and viral, I got a feeling that he's just a good interview. He's very dramatic. He says, you know, when are you going to see a girl like that running to me? And, you know, the other neighbors, actually, I think they rescued her. They keep talking about how they opened the door and stuff like that. They never even mentioned him being there. So I'm wondering if that's an example. Allegedly, if you interview well, you'll get a job over someone who's more skilled. I've never seen it happen. Have you?
Yes.
Give me an example.
I think that's the problem with a lot of our industry is people make hiring decisions based off questions like, why is a manhole cover round versus actually are they qualified to do the job at hand?
Uh-huh. Well, your old company was the specialist in that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Who moved Mount Fuji with a spoon or something like that?
Yeah, that's what the kind of question they used to ask people at Microsoft. And you
thought they're intellectually stimulating questions, but they don't really get to the true essence of whether or not someone's qualified.
So did you feel terrible that you were working so hard to bring in good people, and then when you got them through to these stupid hiring managers, they were asking them ridiculous questions like that and ruling them out?
Yeah, it's frustrating. Absolutely.
What do you do about it?
Re-educate the hiring manager on the validity of the questions they're asking is probably, while interesting, they're not relevant to job performance.
And did you succeed? How'd you do that? I want to hear that story.
Now you're making me put my recruiter hat back on from God knows 12.
Well, you're calling a recruiting
years.
Show. Come on, don't cry, okay? I'm not crying.
I'm just trying to remember a specific example for you because I know you like stories, Michael. So let me.
You see one of your slide decks that had a few pages telling the people like stories. Don't blame it on me.
I love
okay?
Michael.
I love
Michael.
Sorry, was there a question, or you want me to try and tell my story?
Tell your story.
I would say, look, way back then, I didn't know enough compared to what I know now to educate a recruiting manager on why you should be doing behavioral competency-based interviews because that relates to job performance. I probably would have said, hey, is that really getting at the essence of what you're trying to evaluate this candidate for? And they'd say, oh, yes, it relates to their intellectual curiosity or how smart they are. And I mean, I probably would have debated with the hiring manager.
It made you look bad because you're trying to bring in good, relevant people, and they're knocking them out for irrelevant reasons, and it shows up. You like to measure quality of hire. It shows up that you have less good people. Less people get hired who you bring in, right?
Look, that's one of the biggest challenges I think all recruiters face in this day and age is trying to keep hiring managers on track with the criteria versus, you know, setting their own agenda with their own crazy questions.
Yeah. Are hiring managers like the stupidest people in the world? That's a question I ask here all the time.
No, I don't think they are. I think they're just sometimes uneducated to the degree of what the difference between right and wrong is when it comes to recruiting.
Hey, well,
they don't know what they don't know in some instances. They come to the organization with historical baggage on the way they think recruiting needs to be done or how you hire people, and sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong.
Okay, and there's no way to tame them is what you kind of have said already, right?
I disagree. I mean, way back when, back in my early days of recruiting when I was an individual recruiter, sure.
Yeah, okay,
don't
drag it out.
Good.
I want to get to the point, but I'm going to quote from something you sent me that you're one of your PowerPoints said 30% of hiring managers admit that they did a lousy job explaining the job to the candidates in the interview.
Yep.
If 30% admit, you got to figure it's 60% for real. And 40% of new hires say they weren't given a good idea about the job during the hiring process.
Yeah, I got that data, I think, from the corporate executive board.
Okay, whatever. It means these hiring managers are way off base. You're going to tell me how I can bring them into line. Go ahead.
Okay. I'll relate it to a story right now with a very large project we're doing around improving quality of hire. I would say the biggest issue that I've noticed is related to mis-expectation setting on what the real requirements of the role is or what the job's going to be like once you're actually on the job. And, you know, looking at that data from a recruiting standpoint and what recruiters say to sometimes what hiring managers say, they oversell the opportunity in some instances. What happens when the person comes on board, their level of expectation is not mapped,
look,
they leave.
Hold on, you're boring us, okay?
You wanted a story, Michael.
No,
I can't give you a story in one sentence.
A story? Can anybody else back me up with this guy? This is my guest. Keep him in line. A story is interesting. Once upon a time, a hiring manager brought this candidate in that I thought was super, and then after the guy, he said, yeah, he's good, but go find me more people. And you say, why? Well, you know, I'd like to see some other people. How come? And you go, what money you want to pay? The guy tell me like that. And you're not, okay? Can anybody else help me here? Does anybody have a question for Robbie? I'm dying.
Michael, it sounds like someone's speaking from the toilet or something. Very bad echo and toilet sounds.
There is a sound. I don't know. It doesn't sound like a toilet to me, but I'll have to try to block it.
Rob.
Yes.
There I took it. It's 303, by the way.
What's your biggest headache right now in bringing good people aboard, and how do you address it at Avanade?
Biggest challenge bringing people on.
Bringing
forward.
Good people. You just said that you just commented on how you screen and that it's done wrong. How do you teach your teams to go hunt and find? And what's your best tool?
Okay, a lot of questions. Let me see if I can answer them one at a time for you. So are you talking about, do you want the answer to how do we assess better or how do we find better?
You know what?
How do you find better?
Yeah, make it easy for them, okay? You're not doing any better than me.
I'm doing a lot better than you.
You're not.
Well, I think a couple of things. One is I try and this is not me directly. This could be some of my directors or managers working with their teams, but the approach would be if we know what are our, let's say, major competitors in the marketplace, and we know, as an example, what may be some of the awards that these major competitors give out to their top performers, that's an indicator of quality. And if you start to search for those people in those companies with those awards, you're starting to get to a better search criteria for starting with. I'd say that would be one way of trying to identify from the starting point a better quality person. Looking at other things such as when we assess candidates, we have a very robust competency framework here. So
you're killing
like,
me. Does anybody enjoy what they're hearing right now? I mean,
I love robust competency, don't you?
Oh, I don't know what he's talking about, okay? So,
A. Stringer likes it when it comes to Amy Alla.
Okay, let's move on.
Oh, geez.
Is Amy Alla on the show today?
I thought the Amy Alla Mike stuff last week.
Hi. How should internal recruiters be compensated? You're SVP. You're probably in charge of making those decisions. How should we be paid?
Yeah, how are they bonused?
So they get paid a base salary. On top of that, they get paid an annual performance bonus based on how they do against their goals. They are not compensated like
agency recruiters.
And
what are they measured against? What are those? What's the criteria to
Delivery of demand for the business they support, percentage of hires as an employee referral percentage, offer acceptance rates, data integrity, so make sure that they put the data in the system that we need to run these type of metrics. We look at time to fill. We also look at things like cost per hire.
Okay.
And what's the benefit of looking at time to fill?
Sorry, candidate satisfaction scores.
You know what, Amy, we'll come to that
scores.
Stuff later. I got a question for him. Dear Rob McIntosh, thank you. Thanks for trying, okay? Dear Rob McIntosh, I have an offer from a company, and my friend has an offer with the same company for a similar job, but he has a better offer because he got another offer from another company, so they're willing to offer him more to keep him from going there. Can I negotiate for the same salary as my friend?
If I understand the question, I don't see reason why you wouldn't.
How will you do it? The thing is, you have to assume that the company always has more money than they're offering. They can always offer you more. And so because they have to pull this guy away from a competitor, they're offering him more than someone who isn't in that position. What should he do to the say to the hiring manager?
I don't think I really fully understand the question, Michael.
Okay. Me and Jerry go for jobs. He gets two offers. We're both job hunters. He gets two offers. But
I would probably get three or four.
Whatever, Jer. But at one company, we both get offers for the same job, same kind of job. They want to hire both of us. He gets a higher offer than me because they have to compete with the other people. They don't have to compete with anybody for me, so they want to pay me less for the same job. What should I do?
Well, you could hold your ground and say I'm not going to accept the job unless it's X amount of dollars.
Yeah, is that the good thing? I want you to give the insider's point of view and the corporate point of view.
But my question is, how do they know that I've got a bunch of offers and that you don't?
You told them.
Well,
most good recruiters ask, right?
It's
like, what's your current situation? Do you have offers on the table? What's your, you know, where are you in the interview process? So on and such forth.
Why is it so hard? I mean, like... Okay, I'm going to ask you something you should know about. You wrote an article, rather, called Build a World-Class Network in 30 Days. You want to tell us how to do that?
Why, you want me to quote the article for people that haven't read it, in other words?
Yes. Yes. Do I have to walk you through it? Because I will walk you through it if you can't
Michael,
do it on your own.
Yes, Michael, please. I'm pretty immature, so you might have to walk me through it.
Okay. Number one, find all the experts in the field. You take that from there.
Yeah, I'll actually give you an example of how I applied that when I first wrote that article.
You got some real-life examples.
Do you want a story? You're going to cut me off before I finish my story.
If you get to the story, I won't cut you off, okay?
Okay, then shut up and I'll tell you the story.
Well, look, he's getting bossy now.
So I actually had to try and fill a role in a place I'd never done before. I think it was an embedded engineer at Microsoft. I knew nothing about that space, never supported it in the past. I actually went out and found people who wrote articles, and I found the editor of a magazine that specialized in this. I called the editor directly and told them, hey, trying to recruit in this space, don't know anything about it, I'm trying to learn it. Who can you suggest I speak with who's an industry expert? They gave me a couple of names. I called those names. One of the names that person gave me actually ended up being a hire. And that was because I started off calling the editor of a magazine that specialized in a space I knew nothing about.
Okay, so you didn't have to actually build a network. You just got lucky. You called somebody and you got a couple of referrals, and one of them turned
into... that's one of the tactics I used to use to build a network, is call all the industry experts.
Yeah, okay, I want to hear about a time that you actually did build a world-class network, which is like more than five people, in 30 days. Because that's an interesting idea.
I would say it was the embedded engineer example I gave you.
Does anybody agree with that? The guy called maybe four or five people and made a placement. That's not
a four or five leads to another four or five and so on and such forth in a very short period of time. You guys recruit, you know that networking is absolutely golden.
You want to know something? Calling up strangers and asking them for referrals, it's hard work. You don't get them. Like, they don't just drop off trees like you're claiming. So
they do if you do it the right way, Mike.
You tell us, how do you do it? Maybe if you say, I'm with Microsoft and we were looking for somebody, maybe the brand carries a little weight. But what you're saying is, call up, go on the internet, find all the guys who do keynotes in that industry and who write articles, and start calling them, what do you say when you get on the phone with them? Although you prefer email, right?
Yeah, email first contact, because if I call them on the phone, they're busy. They never generally pick up. Or engineers or people in the technical space generally don't pick up the phone.
And you don't leave voicemails on the first call, right?
No, because if they don't know me, then I'm just going to sound like every other person asking for help. I wanted to try and be more personalized.
Why
so that's probably
it, what,
one
what's
of the
so
things
personal,
that I used to do.
What's so enticing about an email?
I'd write the email that specifically would say, hey, I read this article you wrote, or hey, something that was relevant to them, so it just didn't come across like spam. And then I'd say, look, I'd be totally transparent. I'm new. I'd use the old, hey, I'm new in this country. I'm new in this space. I don't have a network. I'm trying to build it. I can see you're an expert, so a little bit of an ego stroke. Thought if I'd ask my question really nicely, you might be able to point me in the right direction or help. I used to find that was really successful, that approach.
Okay, the second point that you make is call your existing network, because even if they're not in the industry, they're going to be connected somehow to people who are. That seemed totally unreasonable to me.
No, I'll give you an example, because I know you like tactical examples, Michael.
I do.
Let's say I wanted to try and find a senior salesperson. Well, I would also call senior marketing people and saying, hey, I know you work with senior salespeople. Who would you suggest? Or I'd call senior finance people.
You can't dodge me that easily, okay? We're talking about you don't know anybody in that industry, and you don't know anybody who knows anybody necessarily in that industry. What you're saying is call those people you know, even if they don't know somebody, and tell them about the job. Is that right?
No. Your use of your use of my words to give your example is so back to front, Michael. I'm saying if I've already got a network, I'm going to tap my own network saying, who should I speak to that might be in this space?
Yeah,
I used to call marketing people to get the salespeople.
No, wait! Here's what you said. Even if no one in your existing network has connections in the target industry, they will point you to people in their own networks who might. You can't back away from it now. That's what you said.
And I still hold true. I would call people in my own network first. I've already got a relationship with them. They're more than likely going to help me more than someone going in cold. Cold should be the last approach.
That's like calling people in the hospitality business to find these embedded software engineers. Is that
what a terrible analogy to use.
That was bad.
Yeah, Michael, you said
that was almost a contrived bad analogy.
Oh, no. You know, I'm so right and you're so wrong, but what can I do, okay? Now,
you're so right that you're wrong? Is that what you just said?
No. Now, number three, when you have a small group to work with, you can't afford to blow your first attempt, right?
Absolutely.
That's really – I've been in that situation, and there's a lot of pressure on you when you don't have a big talent pool. So kind of use that, like you said, a puppy dog approach. Lick the guy a little and make yourself look weak. You're the industry expert. I'm a nobody.
I think this just went to an X-rated show. You're looking guys a little animal.
Yeah, I've done a lot of things in my career. I have not yet licked a person.
I think you have via email, okay? I don't think you get arrested for it, but that's really what you
do. I've stroked people, but I've never licked them.
Stroked them? Oh, that's even worse. Now, look, the thing is, you point out a big problem with email. You don't want to get taken out automatically by the guy's spam filter. So you say, don't put "I need your help" in the subject line. What do you put in the subject line?
Like if I was going to personalize it, I might say, in relation to your article you wrote on here, would be the subject line. I played around for years with different subject lines trying to work out what gets better response rates. And the more personal you can make it, the better response you get.
Okay. There's a lot of expert recruiters on the line. Does anybody think that, you know, you could start a world-class network in 30 days using this guy's technique? I mean, I'd like it to be true.
I would even wonder, why would you want to wait 30 days when you could, for $10, buy one from Brave New Talent?
How do they work? I mean,
Jerry,
I don't know where
were you 12 years ago with that idea?
I don't know.
I could have used that back then.
Yeah, I mean, you can buy any talent community you want, man. $10.
Okay, yeah, it's a talent community. Well, that's a good question, though. It reminds me of a good question. Have you ever bought lists, like membership lists and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I have, actually.
Mm-hmm. How do you go about doing that?
I think you generally have to sort of go down the back alley behind some Chinese restaurants and put the money in a brown paper bag.
What's a reasonable price for a membership society for a certain city?
I got no idea. I mean, it's that long ago that I think I actually paid for a list. I can't even remember when, Michael.
Okay, but I mean, you're in charge of at a strategic level for, you know, people doing that granular work. You don't have any influence on, you know, how they go about doing their job.
Well, I can tell you this. I know no one in my organization, unless they're doing it somewhere behind the scenes, has not purchased a list for years. I mean, most of the companies that I either work for now, the function that I run, we generally build these lists ourselves from scratch.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now your second big thing with this network is you set up an automated email sort of newsletter to go out to these guys once a month is your recommended amount. Is that right?
Yep.
And
sometimes,
what
it'd be, sometimes it'd be more if I had added value content or something that was related to that space I wanted to push out. Sometimes it'd be longer, but I tried to do a reminder once every couple of months.
So
something else for me to delete in my inbox.
Yeah, give us an example.
Well, let's go back to the embedded engineer thing, right? So
that
let's
was so
say,
far in the past.
Well, you want a tactical example, so I'm going to try
okay,
and give
go
you
ahead.
One. If I came across something that I thought would be beneficial to them, let's say I found, I think Robert Half still does these, the salary surveys, and let's say I found a salary survey on embedded engineers, I would send that to my network and say, hey, guys, gals, I thought this might be of interest to you. This crossed my desk the other day. And that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole intent was just to stay front of mind as it related to, hey, who I am, what I do. But it didn't have to be about, hey, I got a job, or do you know someone? It's just reminding them that I'm there.
But don't you think candidates get too much spam as it is from recruiters? Don't you think
they
really just want to hear from us when they have when we have a job available?
Because it's not targeted and it's not relevant. It's spam, to your point. And there's a difference between candidates and network. And sometimes they're one of the same, but I generally try and would treat my network as golden.
But don't you think your network would prefer to hear from you when you have a reason to contact them? For example, I have this position open. Do you know anybody? I have this position open. Are you interested?
No,
I mean,
candidates
get a ton
no
of email from
enough.
Recruiters.
I've found that over the years of doing this, if you provide some type of added value information to them, I used to get responses all the time that says, hey, this is really interesting. Thanks for forwarding.
I just
if
feel
I
like
got,
if I wanted to see a salary survey, I'd
shit,
get on the internet and look at a salary survey.
I would have done a different approach.
I want another example.
What, of sending what type of content I'd send
yeah.
out?
Yeah, one's not enough.
I'd look for white papers on whatever industry that I was specializing in.
Are white papers the most boring thing in the world?
They aren't to engineers. They aren't to software people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the same in retail or manufacturing or, you know, healthcare. Maybe it is, but in my space, they gobble that stuff up.
Really?
Don't
okay.
pay attention to Adam. He recruits in the barista space.
Okay. So the other thing is, though, about that story, and you wrote an article about it, two articles. It must be important. You say make sure that they can tell from the email that it's personalized to them. But you want to send it bulk, but you want to hide the fact that it's bulk. Is that right?
Yes.
How do you do that?
Gee, now you're getting my memory going way back when. I used to do it using Outlook and Outlook contacts, and then I used to organize and structure my Outlook contacts using categories, and then I could merge the categories based on whatever I wanted to send, and it would then send it out to, you know, could send it out to 100 people, 10 people, whoever, but it would come across out of your inbox as being directly to them. So it wasn't BCCing someone or CCCing the group, which totally turns everyone off. But the really, really targeted stuff, like my first contact, I can't do that in bulk. But it's once they're in my network, I'd look for stuff that I could do in bulk but still added value. And I didn't have to worry so much about then the subject lines because they've already agreed to, hey, happy to stay in touch. Then it's not a cold introduction, so to speak. It's now I'm just trying to sustain my network.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If Jerry or Mike gave you a job order to do right today, start on it today. Do you think you could work it?
God, jeez. I suppose like riding a bike to a degree. I think I could.
Okay. I'm just wondering.
Jerry,
is
there something you need some help with, buddy?
No, man. I got everything pretty well nailed down, though.
You don't need a boat cleaning person or something?
No, I need some C-sharp JavaScript developers that can work remotely. They can work anywhere in the U.S. for a two-month project. It's an immediate deal starting Monday. Six people.
And I could use
a
director of human resources in New Providence, New Jersey, if you want to work on that one.
Which one do you want?
Yeah, sure, guys. I sit around playing Tetris all day. I got plenty of time.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering. I mean, you're a big shot. I want to know what you know about recruiting. Because I don't want to know about all those time to hire and stuff metrics necessarily. Cause
I know,
apply...
Michael, I'm trying to dumb it down for you. I'm sorry if I'm not doing a good job.
No. The last 10 minutes have been okay, I think.
You started off a little slow this time, didn't
yep.
you?
Yep.
Yeah, we started off slow because you were talking to
Alan. Michael.
No, your monologue had you shot up for about 15 minutes, and you kind of projected onto your guest, in my opinion.
I don't think so, but thank you, Jerry, for your opinion, okay?
You do get a little ADD at times. You know that.
Oh, maybe I am ADD. I don't know. Look, here's something else you say that I thought was interesting. You say to get one hire, you've got to get 80 passive candidates. You've got to approach 80 passive candidates. Isn't that what you really said?
Yeah, those numbers still directionally, I think, hold true to this day. I mean, we all know it takes a hell of a lot more calls to passive people than it does looking through people applying online to a job, right? So directionally, that's still the same. I mean, some markets have seen that number could be higher, and others, it's a little lower. But I think, you know, Maureen, if she's on the call, would probably validate. Usually it takes about 100 passive leads or names to try and generate a hire.
Maureen says it takes 50 names to get a hire for her.
No way. That's true.
The other thing that I found interesting I've started to look at lately is how long it's actually taken to hire people on average when you first start that relationship has shifted a lot. Like, looking at some of our hires now, over 50% of the hires have come from actually first establishing a relationship 12 months earlier.
You know what?
So then if you've got this big spam network, can't you just reach into that spam network and just pull a candidate out?
Who are you with the spam? You got spam on the brain.
I like what he said. It's Mike Astringer.
Mike, I never had a spam network. I hope my recruiting team doesn't have a spam network. The only spam that I know about is the stuff in a can.
Yeah, okay.
You know what? The way I feel is this. If I want to see your white papers and your salary surveys and all those types of things, I'll subscribe to your social media, and I'm happy to see them there as I choose to look. But
my social media is not a network. It's a collection of names of people that have hit the like button.
But I don't want to see your stuff in my inbox. I get enough stuff in my inbox. I would rather be able to, if I want to look at it, it's there, that's great. But
Mike,
don't
are you an engineer?
Stuff. Am I an engineer now?
Are you a software developer?
No, I'm a 20, almost 22-year recruiter who's been working with software developers all those years.
Okay. So if this didn't work, do you think I'd continue to say, do it?
Do you have specific statistics on who deletes it and who reads it?
No, of course I don't. I don't think anyone could have those.
I would take the position
statistics.
That most people delete your emails.
Yeah, if you use that smile, that monkey or whatever it is, you have those email services now. They tell you who opens it and stuff. I think Jerry does that. Anyway, Jerry, I have to ask Jerry a question. You started to say that's ridiculous, and then you stopped yourself. You usually save it for your show after. I want to know why right now you think it's ridiculous.
What's ridiculous? See, I don't even know what you're talking
through.
About.
You get 80 people. See, Rob.
Maureen says. Well, I'll tell you why Maureen says for every 50 names you get a hire, maybe she charges twice as much for hers. And so she said, hey.
you're not going to get 50 names, right?
Right. You're not going to get a hire for 50 names. I would even think it might be more than 100 legitimate contacts. I'm even beyond Rob's assessment of it.
This is Rob's bread and butter of doing these statistics, and he says 80 passive candidates have to be identified. Then
I thought he said near 100.
He said 80. Okay.
Yeah, then, 80 to 100.
80 to 100. I'm saying past 100. But Maureen, with 50, nope. Especially if there are 50 people who you're digging out of the back rooms of the equipment. In no way, huh?
Guys, okay. You also remember, keep in mind that what it produces may be a hire right now today. You're still going to get future hires out of that list.
Yeah, you always have that SurveyMonkey spam list to reach into.
Okay, move on. You say my team operates with a mindset that is more akin to a sales and marketing function, which creates strategies around market segmentation relationships and strategic selling, and deploys permission and viral-based marketing programs. It's a lot for me to comprehend, okay?
Yeah, what a fluffy bunch of terminology that is. I wonder when I wrote that garbage.
But you said, how I broke it down, I have individuals who, number one, find talent. A second group who romance and sell the talent, and a third group who focus on the business issues and solutions that map back to the sourcing strategies thus allowing the other two functions to focus on what they do best. That number three is totally beyond me. What do they do?
So recruiting is broken out into three areas of specialization. People that do the research, right, identify the names, the sources that actually pick up the phone, call them, sell them, screen them. Then the account management recruiters who line up with the supported business actually then move the candidates through the process, and it's the account management recruiters that are the ones that are working out demand, strategies, how we're going to solve the business demand for their supported businesses. So I've broken either here, where I am now, or historically in the past, the recruiting function into three parts.
Okay.
You know, Animal, I found myself 2 weeks ago saying on your show, thank God I don't work in a big corporation.
Yeah.
And I got to say it again. Thank God I don't work in a big corporation. Because you know what? You take the recruiting process in a big company and you just so overcomplicate it that you need 74 people to do what one person could do.
You know,
You know what? I got to stop here. Clearly, and I've got to be really polite because I am on a public show. You're making your statement. Yeah, that's actually, I forgot about the attendees.
Yeah, don't bother with that.
And that's,
yeah,
I forgot there's not tens of thousands of people on, right? Mike, you can't make wild statements without ever saying that you've run a corporate function. I mean, I'm not telling you how to do your job as a corporate recruiter or an agency recruiter, because I don't know you. But you can't make statements like that and expect that that's universally applicable for corporate recruiting. That is
there's a big difference between large corporate recruiting and small startup corporate recruiting.
If you're trying to get a raise out of me, you just got a raise out of me.
You know what? I work in the startup world. I don't work in big corporate environments. And all of that is all the reason I thank God that I don't.
You know, Maureen is here, I think, and she didn't speak up when she had the chance. I guess she's holding it back as well. Yeah, she is.
Mike, I'm disappointed. I actually thought more of you than that.
Okay, you didn't know him. Okay, so listen. Hey,
you didn't know him until 29.
Let me just get it straight. Mike, I mean...
Hey, is anybody else drinking yet?
Yes.
All right.
And it's only 9:45 here.
Robbie.
Oh,
Robbie.
Man.
Robbie. Rob, did you hang up?
No, I was just messing with you like I pretended I hung up, but I'm good.
Oh, they've done it before. I've lost guests. Look, usually they hang up because of me, though, not somebody else. Okay, so you've got somebody. You've got the internet sourcers. You've got the sort of networkers. They call up and screen the names that the internet sourcers give them. And then once they recruit somebody, they hand it off to a third person who does all the administration, moves them through the process. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much broken.
But it sounds like you have a fourth group who does the strategy or whatever that is.
It sounds like there's a fifth group. Somebody holds up the resume for another recruiter to read it.
There's people within. Actually, that's a new job I should think about adding into the mix. Thanks, Mike, for the tip. There's people within each of those roles.
You're supposed to get angry. Come on.
I'm not going to get angry.
Things like water off a duck's back to us.
Okay.
He's not going to get angry. He's an SVP.
Cage match coming up.
Yeah.
Come on, Animal. Rob's not going to get mad. He has to deal with executives. He keeps his cool on this stuff.
Okay.
Ask him a good question.
So, Mike, is it okay? I'm actually so laid back, I thought I'd walk outside and have a smoke as I talk to you guys. Is that all right?
Yeah!
I'm sitting at my desk smoking, so feel free.
But what are you smoking?
Okay, look.
What,
Rob,
do you want to know the brand?
Robbie.
I'm hoping I can push him to the crack pipe by the end of the show.
Rob.
Yes.
Rob, you used video in a creative way to hire people in England recently. Is that right?
Yes.
You think a third-party recruiter could do that?
Oh, they could, but it's whether or not they think that they're going to get the return on the time they put in to do it.
Want to tell us what you did?
Sure. I had the country. Well, I'll back it up. I don't know how much you guys know about certain technologies are very difficult to fill. Like, in particular, we were looking for SharePoint MOS experts. You probably don't even know what that is, but because it was a very small marketplace.
Which way did we go, George?
Now you're just getting mean, Rob.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to be
We know what you're talking about.
Right.
No, go ahead. Rob, can you just keep talking through these guys? The show's
yeah, sure,
running
sure.
out of time.
I can talk over the top or through or underneath, whatever you like, Michael.
Keep going. Just tell the story.
So in that marketplace in the UK, these people are generally contractors because the demand is so great that they make more money being out on the contract marketplace. They get bombarded by agency and corporate recruiters. They're very jaded by recruiters because they get literally dozens upon dozens of solicitation emails or phone calls or spam, Mike, during the week.
Okay, has anybody been recruiting less than 5 minutes and doesn't know this? Anybody? I think we all get this part.
Just keep
talking. Talk through it, sorry. Yeah, okay.
You mean more than 5 minutes.
So what we did is we said...
Can we use the last
5 minutes
to explain SharePoint?
Please keep telling
Michael, you're going to need to put these people on a leash, I think.
Okay, just tell the story. Leave them alone.
Hey, Animal, you do understand that Rob here is a legitimate business person?
Yeah.
He doesn't have time for all this different
you
crap.
You just go, Jerry. You manage the show for a little. Let him tell
I'm
the
story. I'm just saying. I mean...
Jerry, this is an atypical week for me.
Yeah? All right. Okay, back to you, Animal.
Back
I think
to,
I have everything straight now.
Back to my story, okay. So what we did is we actually put a video together by the country GM specifically talking about why we think this area is so cool with what we're doing, why we're specifically interested in. We identified 12 people. We put that video onto a Zune device. So you guys might remember the Zune, like the iPod equivalent, the Microsoft thing. We then packaged it up with a little post-it note saying play track one. We then sent the 12 Zune devices in a customized box to these 12 people. And then we had the recruiting manager follow up with a phone call. And based on that, we got a 12 for 12 hit rate, as in everyone wanted to speak to us, like, wow, I'm impressed, that's a different approach, got my attention. Out of that, we got one hire, I think, within a month, another one offer. We didn't proceed forward with them, and we still keep in touch with the remaining ballots. Hopefully we can flip them at another time when their contracts come to an end.
So what made the difference? I mean... What was the factor there that turned these people around? Was it just the surprise factor?
I think the big thing to me is because it stood out different than every other approach, that they become sensitized or desensitized to the bazillions of emails and phone calls. We went the extra mile, thought about it, was creative, made it personalized, different. It jumped out at them.
But
I don't know if you guys
itself,
are big fans of Steph.
Was there anything different about the job itself, aside from the...
No, it's the same type of job as everyone else. If you guys are familiar with Seth Godin, I would use the analogy of we took the purple cow approach. We just wanted to do something totally different and unique to try and get their attention, and it worked.
Does he call himself Seth Godin or Seth Godin?
I don't know. Tomato, tomato.
I don't know either. Okay, now you say, I just think, thanks, that was a good story. To me, that was a good story.
Well, I got a lot of these, but half the time you cut me off before I can tell them.
That's not true. Start another one then. Go ahead.
What do you want a story about now? You want a bedtime story?
Yeah, I want a story about how you captured a global hidden talent pool, like you said you did, on eBay.
On eBay?
Yeah, you've got that thing about buy my brain. And one of the things you say, I've architected, designed, sort, blah, 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 and initiatives to capture global hidden talent pools that drive the pipeline ahead. And I want to know how you captured a global hidden talent pool. I mean, that's a mystery to me. Maybe that's not a good topic.
All right, let me break it down. Global equals doing this in multiple countries around the world, right? So that's global.
Yeah.
Hidden as in they're passive, they're not out there actively looking, they mightn't even have a footprint, so to speak, on the internet. It's all you guys do this for a living. It's not rocket science, it's just trying to do it at scale in a global company is what I get to do, an architect, and try and operationalize and put it into companies that where I work. So it's taking what you all do, I'm just doing it at scale, that's all.
Okay, well, let's say you went into a 10-person company with all the kind of analyzing of sort of, you're sort of like that an efficiency expert. And if you went in and analyzed everything people did, would you think you would change most third-party recruiting offices around and, you know, they'd be focusing on different things after you were through with them?
Yeah, probably.
I think in a 10-person company, they'd look at them and say, you know what, we don't have time for this. We need to get
what?
The job done.
Mike, you know what, if I go speak to the CEO of a 10-person company, the person that owns the company, and I say, what's the problem you want to try and fix, I can guarantee you there'll be some changes, because otherwise why am I there in the first place?
But a 10-person company isn't looking at statistics and strategies. They want the job.
No, they're looking at it through the lens of a business person. Am I making money? How can I make more money? And how do I do that? Is it because I can do it quicker, faster, cheaper, smarter, whatever?
Listen, I criticize because I envy you. I wish I could sit in an office and look at statistics all day and send spam, but I don't have that luxury.
Statistics are secondary. It's the upfront. What's the business problem? And it doesn't matter if you're a 10-person or a 10,000 or 100,000. Everyone's got business problems. It's trying to connect the dots to how does recruiting help solve that business problem? Quicker, cheaper, faster, smarter, whatever it might be. Look, Michael, I actually will interject. You and I had an email dialogue. You asked me one specific question. Why do I think I'm successful? And we got into the definition of success.
Yeah.
I will say, Mike, well, one thing in particular is because I look at this through the eyes of the way the business looks at this. I understand things like operating income, lost opportunity costs, all those things that the business runs their business on. And if my recruiting thing is just, all about hire more people, then I'm just being a tactical, transactional function. If I can,
of course, there's a strategy in smaller companies, but it's not around having one guy holding up a resume while the other guy reads it while the third guy picks up the phone.
Yeah, because that's not going to scale. That's not going to scale in a 10-person company. And my approach wouldn't be a cookie cutter that, oh, I did it at, you know, Deloitte or Microsoft, that's the way I want to do it here. My approach would be different depending upon, for instance, we've got some people in some countries, in European countries, where you've still got an HR generalist wearing a recruiting hat. Clearly, I can't use the same approach and strategy that I would in North America to try and solve and fix or optimize the approach in that European country. It's not one size fits all.
You know what? I might have cut everybody off except you and me. Oh, here's everybody. There.
I'm still here.
Okay. Okay.
Get on
so,
with it.
One thing. We're almost out of time, but you said you're using elevator speeches to teach your recruiters how to sell people the job. Can you tell that? So we don't have much time for much more of it. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. I mean, every recruiter knows that, hey, how am I going to sell this job to a candidate? What's the sizzle? What's the things that are going to make this job sound sexy to the candidate? If you take it one step further and you know your marketplace, I used to get, and I still do, our recruiters should know, if we were going to be selling against, I don't know, let's say IBM, I'll use that as an example. What are the things that tick employees off at IBM about the way things get done? Is it too bureaucratic? It takes too long for things to get done. They don't like their performance management cycle, whatever else it is. We'd find out all the pain points, and then when we'd speak to IBM candidates, we'd know how to actually physically sell against their pain points.
How would you find out about the pain points?
You ask the candidates. Ask them point blank, why are you thinking about leaving IBM? Why do you not like it there? And they'll tell you. And you have enough of those conversations, you start to understand. Look, it's even in this day and age, it's so easy. Go poke around on Glassdoor.com. You'll find out pretty quickly why people don't like working for the company they currently work for. I'm sorry, someone's starting their vacuuming early today by the sound of it.
Robbie, you know what? I think the show's picking up. I'm starting to get very interested, but the time's gone. Let's have another discussion. I think I can convince you to come back on, and I'll know where to start. Is that all right?
Sure, I'm happy to do a part two. Look, I have to finish with, you asked me, or you said this thing at the beginning of, you know, why do people do what they do, life and death? To tell you the truth, Michael, the reason I'm here is I want to tick something off my bucket list. I've now been on the Recruiting Animal Show.
And if you come back, I promise not to be here.
Thank you! Oh,
Well.
Wow.
Can I say for the record that Maureen said I was funny today?
Did she?
She tweeted
I saw
it.
That.
She tweeted that. Let me just see.
I don't think
I don't know if I was smart enough for that guest. I didn't understand half what he was talking about.
You know what? And again, for me, it's the reason why I just hate dealing with big company bureaucracy. I have built no less than 100 internal recruiting processes at different companies, predominantly small and mid-market. You know what? We put a recruiter in there. We build candidate sourcing and attraction strategies. We work on their internal referral program because I always believe that the best candidates are going to come from internal referrals. Depending on their priorities, maybe they want a diversity strategy. Maybe they want a social media strategy if they're a small company. But at the end of the day, it's one person that's in there managing the recruiting process, two or three if it's a little bit larger company. But it's not somebody to receive the resume, somebody to hold it up so the next guy can read it, somebody to pick up the phone and then say, mm-hmm. okay, hold on a minute, let me give you to John so he can do the phone screen. I mean, there's just too much bureaucracy in that recruiting process, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we don't – I mean, I work for a big company, obviously, but that does not sound at all like what we do. We're aligned by business group, so we're really deeply embedded in the particular group that we're working with. So it's almost kind of, you know, I'm the corporate recruiter for this small company that is PC Ecosystem, for example, as opposed to, you know, part of the larger structure of all of Microsoft. So
But don't you
don't
wish
know.
You had somebody
get
to hold up a resume for you?
I think I'm going to ask for that.
And another guy to dial the phone?
I have a sourcer. That's it. And we are equals. Like, we handle different aspects of the recruiting process, but we do it together. And there's a lot of overlap. It's really more of a team effort, you know, working on 50 recs versus, okay, here's very clear lines. Tyra goes this far, and then it's Amy's turn, and then Amy gets into this step, and then it's someone else's turn. It just doesn't work like that for us.
And let me be clear. I'm not against the sourcing model. As a matter of fact, we've three times now, and we're about to kick off a fourth project where we've rolled out a national sales force for a new company or a new business unit. I always use the recruiter sourcer model in that type of project. But again, there's just way too many steps in his process and way too many people involved, in my opinion.
Yeah. I don't know if these really high-level guests are the best guests for this show.
No, because not a single person on the phone can relate to what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah. Not to knock Rob at all. I'm sure he's brilliant. He's obviously had a great career. Good for him. He's no doubt smart and successful, but I don't know. I felt like when he finally did kind of start talking about relevant things, he was almost talking down to us a little bit. Well, you may not know, SharePoint developers are really hard.
Yeah, that was pretty
ignorant. You know, like, really? Come on.
I also think
that
Animal hates... I also think that Adam hates Americans, which is why he has these offshore guests.
I don't know. It just was odd. I'm not sure.
So what do you think of the show then on a score of 1 to 100, Mike A. Stringer, a man who's set up over 100 internal departments?
Thank you.
Ooh.
Thank you.
I've only set up one, and it's mine.
And
that's
what you like, and I like what I like.
Allegedly. I mean, 100?
I'm going to give...
100?
More than that, even.
100 salespeople. I don't think you said in 100 departments.
Jerry, there's a ton of people on your show more than ever. You should ask for people who haven't ever said talked to you before.
Hey!
Is that a voice that isn't supposed to be on
your
show?
Back off, animal. I know what I'm doing here. And I'm letting the new people get a feel for what we're doing here. Back off.
All right, I'll give my scores and shut up. I'm going to give the guest a 70. I think that, like as Amy said, he was talking down to us, and none of us could even relate to what the hell he was talking about.
He wasn't talking down to me, so that's more.
How about he was attempting
to? Go ahead.
Is that better? He was attempting to?
Okay.
And I'm going to give Animal a 65. I think he did his best to keep this show moving forward, but... listen, at this stage of his career, he just doesn't have it anymore. I mean, everybody, I'm the world's biggest Howard Stern fan. It's time for Howard Stern to retire.
Are you starting to sabotage him, A. Stringer? I think you should admit your bias in the fact that you want to rub him out. And so you're trying to chip away at his score. A 65? Come on, dude.
And he could have guessed.
Okay. We accept all scores regardless of the obvious and clear bias. So,
but I will make my bias known that I want you to take over the Animal Show and I want to take over the After Show.
Man, I'm too busy. I'm almost ready to just hand over the After Show to you. as an interim guy for a little while. I'm booked. I should be recruiting right this very second. I need a dozen people to start projects Monday. And what am I doing? Messing around with the animal show, though I love it.
I need a director of human resources in northern New Jersey.
You need what?
For who?
A director of human resources in northern New Jersey.
What industry?
Manufacturing.
Northern Jersey.
Northern Jersey.
Isn't all Jersey northern Jersey?
Unfortunately not.
Really?
What are they doing? Actually a nice part of Jersey.
What is southern Jersey?
Southern Jersey would be the shore over to Philadelphia. Central Jersey would be the central part of the shore north. And the northern Jersey, in my opinion, would be like the Jersey Turnpike north, like where the Turnpike and Parkway interact north.
Mm. And they actually have manufacturing there, not just a bunch of jerks calling me up trying to be my stockbroker all the time.
What do you think they manufacture?
They
manufacture jerks, Jerry.
This would be the corporate office in northern New Jersey of a national... International, manufacturing company.
All right. Yeah, well, let's get the word out on that. Help you out. Director of HR for a manufacturing company. Non-union?
Some of both.
Okay. All right, man. Let's go with someone who has never called in before based on Animal wanting me to put my kid gloves on and really dig in with the new people. New callers, anybody? Rob's friends? Anybody step forward, please. Anybody?
I don't know. Is my mic on?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, this is Steve Mahez out of Detroit.
Hey, Steve. You're the biggest fan of the Animal Show.
I'm a newbie. I'm the guy that found it late last week, and I listened to a number of the shows, and you guys play hardball. It's pretty cool. I like that. Today's show, if I was to rank it, I'd give the guest about a 55. I think he should have known what he was walking into, and I'm thanking my stars that I left 3M, 10 years ago, because that's why I left, was to get out of that world, you know. Animal, I'd give him a 70, 78, I guess. He was sparring more with Rob, I think, than we were actually getting useful information out of them, you know. But anyway, that's what I guess. I guess my input.
Steve,
so after
fantastic.
Listening to all those shows, did you
Steve,
walk away thinking
listened?
That Mike A. Stringer's an a-hole?
This guy was prepared. He's listened
okay.
to multiple podcasts of the Animal Show, and he's ready. He had his scores. He had his reasons. Awesome.
He did a great job. I just want to know if you thought Mike A. Stringer was an a-hole. That's all.
That's kind of been floating around the...
That's a great branding comment, Mike.
Thank you.
Sweet. Hey, Steve,
and you know what's amazing is that when I meet new people, they do sometimes say, oh, yeah, I've heard you on the Animal Show, so I really should rein myself in.
You really should. Steve, can you help us pronounce your last name, though? We didn't quite catch that.
It's Nahez.
Nahez.
Yes.
All right. And where can people find you to connect with you?
Oh gosh, I'm everywhere. We're in the process of launching another program with our office, and it's going to be a huge risk. And I'd love to talk with you guys about it later. Maybe Animal will let me in on that because I want to run it. Yeah, I'd love to run the concept past you guys. But we had to change the name because I used to be with a franchise company, and in order to launch the program, I didn't want them to be attached to it. So I had to go solo. And the best marketing I could find from doing some research and stuff, we ended up naming the agency temporarily for the next year or so, Nahez Recruiting, because we do work in a very narrow niche. It's automotive engineering. Everything else kind of spirals out from that. We'll do buyers and sales and stuff like that. But our focus, we've got five recruiters. And the way I structured this office is that everyone works on everyone's stuff, and we have a very cooperative atmosphere where we share candidates inside the office, and we kind of gamble that the candidate's going to be hired by somebody, and then whoever gets the hire gets the majority of the fee, and then there's little tiny splits that are done inside the office, but it's a very cooperative effort, you know.
Great. What's your Twitter handle so people can connect with you there? Are you on Twitter?
I have. Yeah, I actually have an outside social media guy. I think it's Nahas Recruiting.
Yeah.
I think if you punch it, I should jump on the computer real quick. And
yeah,
I
wouldn't worry about it. Stay off Twitter.
Or Nahas REC.
Bunch of crap.
Yeah, it is Nahas Recruiting.
When can you come on the show, my dear? When can we book you as for a guest appearance on the show? Let's do it right now.
Are you
Let's
in charge
calendar.
Of booking now?
Hey,
Animal, what did I miss here? You now have a booking agent?
Okay, listen to what Animal did. He tweets me, tells me to book this guy, so I'm going to do it because I'm a nice person. And then he's also calling me out saying that I'm bad-mouthing Rob and don't I know that Rob set up sourcing at my company.
Well, Amy, so let's move
yeah.
on to your scores. Hey, Steve, thanks for calling in. Glad to
no
have you join the
Steve.
Group. We'll track
no
you
problem.
Down and say hello.
But wait a minute,
no
before
problem.
We go to her you scores, know. Don't you think Animal needs a booker?
A bookie, maybe. I don't know about a booker. Okay, Amy, play some scores on me.
All right, I'm going to give Animal, I'm going to be generous. I'm going to give him an 80. I think he did a pretty good job of pushing back. I think he handled the show fairly well.
He struggles to get beyond anything that's actually conceptual or above the recruiting 101 stuff.
I thought, but Rob is not a recruiting 101 guest.
He's a different guy.
He's way higher. He's much more strategic. He's operating at a completely different level that, again, didn't necessarily make sense to this crowd. Now, when I started asking questions, and getting into
what do you mean by this crowd? A bunch of dummies? A bunch of stooges?
No,
what?
A bunch of...
what do you mean?
Stooges, right? No, I mean, we're like in the trenches making placements every day. That's not what Rob does.
Okay.
I'm not saying that one is better or worse. They're just in different places.
He's 2 to 3 levels up from that.
Exactly. So he's going to talk about things that are 2 to 3 levels up from that, and it's not that, we're not smart enough to understand it. It's just the question of relevance for us. Is that going to impact the invoices you're going to send, Jerry? Is that going to impact the sourcing session I've got planned for this afternoon with 3 hiring managers? That's where
okay.
I think there was a disconnect. And I think that, and again, it could be just a persona. I kind of was cringing a little bit because I started wondering, do I sound that snarky? Do people listen to me when I get on and start ranting and, saying things similar to what Rob say? And do I sound that unapproachable?
You sound incredibly sexy.
Yeah. See, we're going to lose our newer audience members with the slobbering and the stuff.
It's
going to
be the Mike and Amy show pretty soon.
Mike and Amy. So what score are you giving then to Rob?
I thought I gave him a 72. Did I say 72? I'm gonna go with 72. I feel all like right. he got a little frustrated, and I kind of felt like he was talking down a little bit. I don't know. Did anybody else get that? Maybe I'm just being sensitive. I should go stop bombing.
No, I think he got a little bit snarky about the Ace Stringer spam comments and a few other things.
Yeah. And I'm the queen of snarky, so I don't blame him for that. But as a listener, I kind of thought, wow, I hope I don't come across that way because I didn't, as a guest, it didn't feel real good, and I didn't feel like I got much out of it that I would hope to get from someone who's accomplished as much as he has and, would hopefully have as much to share with us youngsters. You know what I mean?
All right. Thanks, Amy. Alan? Yeah. Wait a minute.
71. Okay. Go ahead.
Go
71
ahead.
For the guest, 66 for Animal. I think he had a good guest. I think he was approaching him from the wrong place. That's all. And he could have been good, and I do think the guest got a little tweaked at us.
Should people have to dumb it down for this
No.
I mean,
I don't think they should be able to handle this show. And I quite honestly, Jerry, for this guy and others like him, I think it's a great let off steam, almost like a conference call blog, if you will. They get to speak their mind, speak their piece, take the hits, give it back, and just, hey, I had a great experience here kind of thing. So,
do you think he did?
Most don't.
I think here and there, but again, I think Animal could have come at him from a different perspective, and I think he could have been, and I think he, not dumb it down, but I think he could have changed. I think he could have stepped off of his podium just a little. He could have stepped down his podium a little bit. That's all.
Maybe some people are just. I mean, when you're so close to the pinnacle, to the top of this profession, maybe you just don't see it. Maybe you know what I mean.
Also, he's a big pro. He's got. I mean, in his position, he's got to be a big process guy with all of his. So he's about how many bales of hay are we getting, et cetera, and he's not dealing with, he doesn't really care about how are we cutting the hay or how are we baling it. It's how many bales are getting in the barn. So I think we like to hear the first two or three steps, and he's a couple removed. I think
the animal just asked the wrong questions. I mean, that's probably, you know, the bigger.
We don't have to start barn reference,
Jerry would understand.
Bring me on again, Jerry. I'll do it. I don't care.
What'd you say, A Stringer?
I said it was good that he used the hay and barn reference, so you'd get it.
Oh, there you go. You know, in fact, I will be running a disc this evening.
All the best to everybody. I got to jump.
Yeah.
See you, Alan.
All right. Maybe I should switch the scores. Maybe it was really just animal not treating the dress, but it is, asking the right questions. So, what's my score?
Who else has a score that's called in that has not spoken up? Are we getting kicked off?
I think that's probably Alan. He screws up the line all the time. What's his area code? 818?
Yeah, he's 818.
There you go.
Jeez, man.
You know what? He's called in a million times and never figured it out.
He still doesn't know, does he? All right, anybody else? Now, Animal, you said that there were tons of callers here.
There's at least 10 or 12 people on the line.
Animal, I tried to book Steve.
I talked to him on LinkedIn. Area code 425 just called in. Maybe he or she.
Hey, 425. Who is it?
Somebody near me.
Come on,
maybe it's somebody at Microsoft.
What happened to Kathy?
I wish I was near you.
Oh, jeez.
Here, Jerry, I'll just give you the area codes. Area code 636.
How about anybody that hasn't said anything? Say something. You don't even have to give your name. You can just be anonymous. We know that you called in so you could say something. Say something, please.
Something.
Maybe they just called in to listen and let you guys talk. You'll entertain them. Go
or
ahead.
Maybe they're just waiting for the next show to start.
Yeah, what's the next show? Yeah. Maybe you could start doing, maybe you could do a Mike and Amy after show and then just see if there's like, it's almost like, you know, you used to have Carson. Then it was Letterman after that, and then there was some other dude after
that. The Late Show or something.
Who was that guy? You know who I'm talking about?
No, but it would be nothing but heavy breathing anyway.
Yeah, see, that's, and then we'd pull the plug on it. Okay, everybody, I hope you have a super week. That's really about it. Maureen, I know you're listening. Take it easy. Have a good one, everybody. Gotta go.
Bye-bye.
Don't let me